Good afternoon. Welcome to Division 1 of Colorado Court of Appeals. We have one case on the docket today, Byrne versus Barkle. I hope I pronounced those names correctly. Our counsel here and ready to proceed.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. I assume you're familiar with most of our rules. I just want to go over a couple of them. As you know, we have 15 minutes per side. The appellant may attempt to reserve some time if you would like. Obviously, that will depend upon how long the questioning goes. If there's questioning, if you would like me to remind you at a certain point that you would like to reserve the time, I'd be happy to do that. If there's anybody here who has cell phones or other gadgets that might make some noise during the argument today, I'd ask you to please turn those off so that they don't interrupt us. Also, keep in mind that the arguments are recorded for availability over the internet. So if you would stay very close to the podium and the microphone, we'd appreciate it. And the lectern is adjustable up and down by virtue of a toggle switch if you need to adjust it. I think with that, we're ready to proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Levy here on behalf of the appellant, Kathleen Barkle. With me also is Catherine Cobb. And with that, I will start. May I ask, does the yellow light come on at 5 minutes?
Should.
Okay. That will be my notice of reservation.
I only say that because last time we were here, we had some problems with the clock, so I hope it does.
And just as an aside, I'll say we're very happy to have found you here today, because that did take a little bit of effort. But okay. So anyway, we're here, obviously, the court has read the briefs, et cetera. And we are here, unfortunately, on something that keeps coming up on a repeated basis, and that has to do with the disclosure of evidence prior to trial. The primary issue here is the disclosure of damages evidence being with respect to the medical bills. And I think the sort of what is shown here is that it's undisputed that all of this evidence was not timely disclosed. So then we are in the Todd versus Bear Valley world of what do you do about that with respect to the untimely disclosed evidence? Is it harmless, etc.? And the real question is, did the defendant have a reasonable opportunity to be able to defend itself against?
What wasn't timely disclosed? $7,000 worth of medical bills, $20,000 worth of medical bills. I can't quite tell from your brief.
I believe it was $11,000.
Let's see.
Right on. I'm sorry. Okay.
Let's do it categorically. Is it what wasn't disclosed as of the mediation, or are you saying all of it that wasn't sent out by formal discovery?
Our position is there was no disclosure, any reasonable disclosure at the mediation. So I understand the trial court did look at that issue. That document is attached as Appendix A to the appellee's brief. We don't believe that shows any reasonable disclosure. It's just simply a ledger. So our position first is, Your Honor, that there was that disclosure is something of a canard here, because there was, other than sort of the information that here is a ledger, and again, it's attached as Appendix A, of the medical bills to date. There is no total on that one attached. There are a lot of diagnosis codes, and honestly, it appears that there are some things actually redacted, which gets into sort of one of the things I wanted to mention with respect to the prejudice. Obviously, I think this court is aware one of the biggest issues going around these days with these kinds of non-disclosures and or disclosures is what is called sort of this billed versus paid issue. Because it's relevant to the reasonableness and whether or not the bills, whether these particular bills are reasonable amounts, et cetera. But, and that's pending before the Supreme Court on the Tucker case, and I'm not going to get into that issue a whole lot other than to say that that's one of the reasons why there needs to be timely advanced disclosure of the medical bills. Now, in looking at the record in this case, it appears to me that there is what I would call a kind of reverse presumption going on. And I'm honestly going to tell you, it's not like it doesn't happen a lot, because it does happen a lot. But kind of this reverse presumption of, well, you knew there were medical treatments, you knew that there were charges for those medical treatments, and therefore the defendant is on notice that these things are out there, and therefore you should have gone out and done more discovery to figure out what they are. And I call that a reverse presumption because I think the rules are very clear that the rules are set forth so that defendants should not be required to have to go out and do this kind of discovery in order to find out what the plaintiff is going to be presenting as damages. Now,
but Mr. Levy, Judge Ballin said in her order denying your motion for a new trial that according to the exhibit, which I think is the one that's attached to the appellee's brief, that there was an itemization of bills, and it does, by the way, have a total of about 29,000 something, and that there is a listing of codes, and that through that listing and the codes and the information you had obtained through mediation, you had a reasonable opportunity to obtain whatever information you needed about at least that $29,000 worth of medical bills. Do you disagree with that conclusion?
Yes, sir, and no, sir. I'm gonna say, yes, we had, I suppose, an opportunity because we could have gone then and taken depositions of all of the medical practitioners in their medical offices and found out what all the bills are. We don't think the rules require us to do that. And it gets into another part of problem here is just because somebody has a loss does not mean they intend to present that at a particular jury trial coming up. We may also, a defendant may also have noticed that because of injury, somebody has lost work. But that doesn't mean we can anticipate that they're going to show up on the day of trial with no prior notice and say, oh, by the way, we're making a wage loss claim. When it looks, the record here shows that most of the disclosures were ultimately done about a week prior to trial. And so the fact that the bills existed, the fact that they were mentioned and disclosed at the mediation is interesting. It is a factor. But we think particularly when you look at the actual document, and I do apologize, Your Honor, for missing the total that was on there, that's just kind of a starting point because that's not, again, there wasn't a disclosure in the pretrial 26A disclosure of any particular amount of the medical bills. And again, there's this, I think, sort of presumption running through here that, well, if you have an injury, then of course people are going to be presenting their medical bills. And so by virtue of the late endorsement, and again, this is a big issue these days because the reasonableness of somebody's billings has come quite into play in consideration with the collateral source rule, and is this a reasonable billing, or what do you normally bill other people, et cetera, et cetera.
Did the defendant have an expert lined up to testify as to the lack of reasonableness of the charges or the lack of reasonableness of the service provider, something to that effect?
No, sir.
So how were you prejudiced by not having the bills? What difference did it make?
Precisely for that reason, Your Honor, because we didn't have the opportunity to get such an expert. Again, throughout the record here, there's talk about our IME doctor, and there was an IME doctor.
I understand a damages, someone to challenge the reasonableness of the services rendered, the reasonableness of the fees charged, but you didn't have anybody listed to do that. That's what you're telling us, right?
That is correct.
And you're saying that was because you didn't know that they were going to present medical records that you might want to challenge.
That is correct.
So you got it. So then when you got the medical records, it was what, a few weeks before the trial?
I think it was just about 9 days. I think it was a week before.
So then you moved to continue the trial in order to get an expert and challenge the amount of damages.
That's a good point, Your Honor. I don't believe such a motion was made. And I do recognize that as an issue in this case, obviously. But again, under the sort of general, I would say, yes, maybe we didn't formally ask for a continuance, but it's clear that our complaints were being made. The trial court could have suggested that as a remedy, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to present to the court that the fact that we did not make that one request should not be considered fatal to this concept.
Mr. Levy, I was looking when I read your briefs for some evidence of prejudice because the Todd case, as you mentioned, requires a showing that the late disclosure of information was either justified or harmless. But other than a generalized statement of prejudice, I didn't see any specific statement that you were unable to cross-examine about a particular bill or that you were surprised by a particular bill.
Well, the bills were admitted through the plaintiff. The plaintiff obviously did not have foundation about whether, you know, is this $150 a reasonable charge for this particular procedure? And then they were mentioned, although there was some limitation with respect to Dr. Centeno about how much he was allowed to testify with respect to that. But we are in a world these days, and again, if you look at most of the case law talking about the admissibility of the medical bills per se, and particularly through the plaintiff, they're 20, 30 years old. And when you're looking at where we are today, I'll give you some examples. We have taken a deposition of a CFO of a hospital chain that says anyone who asks will get a 25% discount. Doesn't require any pre-existing contract, doesn't require any of the factors with respect to the, you know, what normally goes on with the collateral source rule. And again, what we have here is we have a situation where it was not until the last minute that these additional medical bills were to come in. And Dr. Santana was asked about that, and Ms. Selden puts in her brief that Dr. Santana was in fact allowed to testify with respect to the reasonable amount of all of the bills. And again, another thing that gets kind of mixed in these issues is reasonableness and necessity is not just for the actual treatment, for the condition, but it has to do with what are the reasonable charges with respect to the bills. Now, in fact, Dr. Santana was limited to talking simply about his own bills. But again, I'll point out that's something that's not even in his rather extensive disclosure, which then kind of gets me into the other issues of the PowerPoint that he ended up using. And I want to talk about that just very briefly with respect to, if you look at Dr. Centeno's disclosure, and this is something we have seen a lot, it's a generic disclosure that would allow Dr. Centeno to literally testify about anything. I'm going to testify regarding this, I'm going to testify regarding that without any specifics. He did in fact talk about the mechanism of injury. He did in fact use this material to talk about the various mechanisms of injury, and again, that was surprise. And so you could say in this disclosure that, again, is very generic, did not mention any particular of these things that were going to be used, did not give the defense any opportunity, but it's just sort of this global statement so that they can come in, as can happen, come in at the last minute. And what I kind of want to impress upon the court at all is that this idea of the medical records and these exhibits that are going to be used by the doctors and the fact that the doctors do not traditionally talk about causation in their own medical records. That's why we have this issue with respect to retained experts. That's why there is an order out of the Boulder District Court that says that if you're going to make an opinion on causation, you have to be disclosed as a retained expert, et cetera. And therefore, this stuff has to be disclosed in advance so the defense knows what it has to respond to, i.e., what does the PowerPoint look like? What are the things that maybe we might need to get an expert? And I just want to mention the last issue, because I am running out of time here, the last issue with respect to admission of the report. We just think the whole best evidence analysis is just incorrect. It's not a best evidence analysis. It's not the original of the videotape, but it is simply another person who has knowledge and should have been able to allow the report as an exception to the hearsay rule because it was a business record generated by him.
How were you hurt by that report? Well, let me put it this way. Your investigator testified and he showed the portions of the videotape that he wanted to show the jury, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then what would the report have added to his testimony, if anything?
I don't have a good answer for that, Your Honor, to be perfectly honest.
Were you at all precluded from using the report to refresh his recollection of what he observed without putting it in?
I believe Judge Balin made it very clear before he got on the witness stand that he should not be asked questions about the materials that were in his report. And for that reason, therefore, counsel did not do that. But, Your Honor, you're correct. Counsel did not do that. So that is accurate. And then finally, the admission of the medical bills under the hearsay rule was error simply because the person through whom they were admitted did not produce the records. And again, this is a common fallacy we see a lot. It's that because the records exist in somebody's file, they must be a business record, but the business record exception says they have to be produced by the party who maintains them because that is the guarantee of trustworthiness.
Mr. Levy, I have a question on the first issue. I want to clarify something about whether you had an expert available to testify as to reasonableness of the medical expenses.
Yes, sir.
Is it the case that you had no expert lined up at all, or is it the case that you had an expert lined up, but because the materials were disclosed so late, it was too late for that expert to prepare any kind of a report?
We had no expert lined up at all to comment on the foundation to comment on the reasonableness of the charges. We did have an IME doctor. IME doctors traditionally, I mean, the doctors don't know that stuff. Their office managers handle that kind of thing, i.e. that's why we deposed in that one case the CFO of the hospital chain rather than some of the doctors.
Dr. Pitzer was the IME doc.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Good afternoon. I'm Stephanie Selden for the appellee plaintiff, Hope Byrne. The standard of review for all these issues is abuse of discretion. Was the trial court's decision manifestly arbitrary, unreasonable, or unfair? Plaintiff contends that the record on appeal is actually inadequate to permit review of some of these trial court rulings. The issue of late disclosures was the best preserved for appeal. Plaintiff's medical bills totaled $40,000. Bills from three of the current providers were disclosed after the deadline. Most of these were from plaintiff's treating physician, Dr. Centeno. And the court looked at the Todd versus Bear Valley factors to determine whether defendants suffered any prejudice due to the late disclosure. And the court ruled no, there was no prejudice, and she set forth several reasons for her ruling. Plaintiff had disclosed $33,000 in medical expenses at the mediation. And appellant's argument that somehow they didn't know that we were requesting this amount for damages, I find is incredulous. We presented them at the mediation because we were requesting damages for the medical bills and pain and suffering.
What you presented was the exhibit that's attached to your appellate brief.
That's correct, Your Honor. Exhibit Appendix A. And that ledger states the date, the medical provider, the amount of the bill, and the diagnostic code. The item redacted was just the amount that was received. And there had been a prior ruling by the trial court that the amount billed was the correct amount of damages, not the amount paid. And so that the amount paid was the item that was redacted from the Ingenix ledger.
Selden, I want to get to this issue of the code because, as you say, it's a code.
Right.
So unless you know the code, you don't necessarily know what the service rendered is.
Right.
And how are the plaintiffs, or excuse me, how are defendants' counsel supposed to know what the actual services were? I mean, wasn't that your obligation to disclose that, not just some code?
Well, we disclosed all of the medical records, and the trial judge, Judge Balin, looked at the actual bills, and the bills also just state a code. There's no, it doesn't say, oh, this is for, you know, physical therapy to the neck. It just says code, you know, 743.2, so that the actual bills didn't give you any more information. And so that's how the trial court went through all of the medical records, and there's no dispute that the medical records for the treatment were all disclosed, and those medical records contained all of the tests, all of the diagnostic work, and all of the treatment. That was a finding by the trial court.
How is the defendant supposed to know that 742.3 is treatment for the neck? I don't understand your answer. I don't understand the connection.
So how medical doctors are billed, how those charges come are with codes. And this is how, in the industry, they all use codes for treatment and diagnosis. And so you have to either have the book or you go online or you find the codes. And this is not unusual. I mean, all the medical records and bills are a lot of codes.
Are you asserting there's a standard set of codes that would be accessible to the defendant online?
Yes.
It's not just particular to the insurance company that your client was using.
Right. There is a uniform set of codes.
Gotcha. Like the DSM sort of.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's available on the internet. In fact, you know, defendant really is represented by State Farm, and so they are paying for these bills, so they clearly know all the codes, really. I mean, the State Farm is the actual appellant here. And the trial court looked through the medical records, and she correlated the dates that each of the providers did the treatment, and she was able to correlate the dates with the medical records. And she states that, I think the best practice would have been to disclose all the medical bills, But I think my job really is to figure out whether the absence of the actual medical bills put the defense in a position that made it such that they were not able to evaluate the bills and costs being assessed in this case. And I think, Judge Bailyn goes on, that there was a reasonable alternative to that through the use of the medical records. So I've chosen not to exclude the request for medical payments. And that's the court's finding. She also looks at, as the court was talking about, what was the prejudice? Was there any issue because the defendant couldn't review these for reasonableness? And the trial court found, well, they didn't review any bills for reasonableness, and so there was no harm. And then also, during cross-examination, plaintiff put on testimony of four medical providers, and not one of those providers was cross-examined as to the amount of their bills or as to the treatment, whether they were reasonable or necessary. There was no motion to continue the trial. The defendant had all the medical records. They knew of the treatment. There was no surprise that we were claiming these medical bills. And finally, there was no bad faith or willfulness in the late disclosures by the plaintiff. And the trial court found that the plaintiff had not received the bills from Dr. Centeno, and these were the bulk of the late disclosed bills, until after December 31st of 2008. It was because of the holiday season. And she said, well, there was no bad faith or willfulness. And I submit there was no abuse of discretion by the trial court in admitting these few late disclosed medical bills.
Selden, did some of these bills relate to services that were provided after the discovery and disclosure cutoffs?
Some of the bills did relate. Yes, there was current ongoing treatment with Dr. Katz, with Dr. Centeno, with the physical therapist. And so some of them were after that disclosure cutoff. Then going to the issue of disclosure of Dr. Centeno's PowerPoint slides, Dr. Christopher Centeno was timely endorsed as an expert. And he was a treating physician. The really threshold issue was the evidence complained about presented at trial. The defendant claimed the PowerPoint was late disclosed and objected to it because it was explaining causation of the injury. And in specifically at the pretrial hearing that Judge Bailyn conducted on, I think it was January 23rd, the defendant was talking about the video that was in the PowerPoint showing movement of the body when it was hit in a rear-end collision. And defense counsel was arguing that this was occupant kinematics and shouldn't be allowed. The judge actually allowed some of it, saying it would help the jury, but we didn't present that evidence. We had technical problems at trial with getting the PowerPoint together, and we put on very, very few slides of the PowerPoint. If you look, the record is not clear, the PowerPoint was just a demonstrative exhibit, so we don't have it in the record. But if you look at it carefully, you will see that Dr. Centeno used a few of the PowerPoint slides to explain the diagnostic tests. He looked at cervical and lumbar MRIs. He looked at x-rays of the neck. There was no testimony and no PowerPoint on the forces of the body in a rear-end collision. Nothing at all. He didn't use the PowerPoints when he discussed the mechanism of injury. In fact, on causation, the testimony is, the question is, do you have opinion regarding causation of Ms. Burns' injuries within a reasonable degree of medical certainty? And he says, I do the car crash. What is that based on? And the answer is based on the fact I've seen hundreds of other patients with similar injuries through the years and this type of crash mechanism. And there's medical literature that discusses it, and there's nothing else in the records to indicate that she had this prior to it. The fact was pretty clear that she had ongoing issues after the day of the crash. And that's it. That's the only part that talks about causation during the trial testimony. This evidence that he claims is an appealable issue wasn't even presented. The issue of the surveillance report. Again, there was not an adequate record preserved for why the surveillance report should have been admitted. Although the defendant laid foundation for the admission of the report as a business record, there was no offer of proof of why the surveillance report would be admissible. Not all relevant evidence is admissible. And from the record, it appears that this report was merely cumulative evidence of the video. Since there was no offer of proof, there's no basis for this court to rule on whether Judge Balin erred in excluding the written report. And there was a question about whether the report was discussed prior to the surveillance videographer getting on the stand. It was not. It's just in the record during the testimony of the videographer, and she asked to put on the to submit a redacted portion of the video, and the court allows a redacted version to be shown to the jury.
Ms. Selden, was the videographer or the investigator questioned about the contents of the written report?
There was one question that defense counsel made. There were no other questions that were made. Certainly, she could have asked more questions had she wanted to. But it was not clear really as to what more information the report would have. And the trial court actually said that she thought one of the reasons she's excluded the report was that the report was the videographer, the investigator's interpretation of what the video showed. The video shows the plaintiff doing various activities, and then the report says, well, you know, she got out of her Mercedes-Benz and did this, and that's what was in the report. There is a question regarding an issue regarding admission of the medical bills through plaintiff's testimony. She testified that she'd received the medical bills. She reviewed the summary, and the summary was accurate. And the trial court had ruled early that the amount billed was the amount that was the correct measure of the damages. And plaintiff said this was the amount that was billed.
She testified that she paid those bills?
She didn't. There was not testimony that she paid the bills because her health insurance paid that. And that issue had been decided earlier by the trial court ruling that it was the amount billed, not paid, that was going to be admissible as the measure, correct measure of damages. And that issue, that order was not appealed by the defendant or the appellant. So, finally, I would request attorney's fees in this case. Plaintiff believes that defendant filed this appeal due solely to the large amount of the verdict, $712,000, in order to delay and harass the plaintiff. Some of these issues appealed are frivolous. There is a lack of record on appeal on these issues. Certainly, the record of what medical bills were disclosed late, there is no adequate record for a review of what medical bills were actually disclosed late. The PowerPoint slides that were complained of were not used at trial. There was no offer of proof on the surveillance report. And it was not disputed at trial the plaintiff's medical bills were reasonable, necessary for treatment, or authentic. In fact, the defendant never cross-examined or questioned either plaintiff's treating physician, Dr. Centeno, about the bills, or the plaintiff. There were no questions of either of those persons regarding the medical bills. And we would request the court to award attorney's fees and costs and allow appellee to file an affidavit regarding the amount of attorney's fees. In conclusion, all of Judge Balin's rulings were reasonable and well-founded. Defendant has not illustrated any instances where the trial court's ruling was manifestly arbitrary or unfair. The trial court is given wide discretion to make decisions regarding admissibility of evidence. Defendant has not proved any abuse of discretion by the trial court. Based on the evidence, the jury reached its verdict, and that verdict in the amount of $712,000 should be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Selden.
Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Levy, you have a minute and 13 seconds remaining.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to comment on this. This is not the defendant's appeal. It is the defendant's appeal. This verdict substantially went beyond the amount of the insurance policy limits. which, and so to say this is a State Farm issue, et cetera, obviously there was an insurance policy involved here, liability insurance, but to say it's not that appeal. This concept here that, first of all, that plaintiffs should be given attorney's fees awarded because of what have been found to be errors. I mean, even Judge Bailyn said, yes, I made an error with respect to the ruling, but I'm going to come back and do it under the residual hearsay rule. Again, there was not sufficient foundation on any of this stuff. And I know it sounds in some degree like these are technicalities. Okay, so what? So you knew there were medical bills, et cetera. But again, what I would urge the court to do is look at this like any other evidence. What if the converse was true? What if a week before trial we showed up and we had a videotape of Dr. Centeno, who, by the way, is not a normal sort of treating doctor. He's got all these institutes and things having to do with auto accident injuries. And showed up a week before saying that he was not telling the truth about all this. Would we be allowed to use it? And say, well, Dr. Centeno obviously knew that conversation happened. But again, there are issues like, was it legally obtained, et cetera, and did it really happen, et cetera. And I just point the court to page 45 of the transcript of the hearing on January 23, where Ms. Vasquez talks about how none of these documents were produced. Ms. Selden wouldn't give us any medical authorizations, medical records, or the treatment notes typically, not the medical bills. And had we gotten authorizations, we would have been able to get this stuff ourselves.
Mr. Levy, your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments today. We will issue an opinion in due course in this case. Because this is the only case on the docket today, the court will stand in recess and the bailiff may so announce.